Blog Talk Radio.
Take it for what it is.
captures the whole mood of redemption, universal redemption. And we'll discuss this after the song, but I'd like to play it tonight to begin the show. And here it is. Playing for Change. About 20 different musicians from all over the world. Hirotsuto Agusami from Japan. Thank you. And others that
come. Old pirate, yes, sir, of I. From dying to the motion ship. Minutes of the day to God.
From
the bottom lately, but my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you get to see another song of freedom? But ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy. The sun of them cannot stop the time. And how long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? And some said it's just a part of it. Well, we've got to fulfill the full. Another song of freedom. It's all I ever had. Redemption song. Yes, Lord. Redemption song. Redemption song.
I'm going to read this, and you can get this information from Redemptionist Divine in the Bible on Google. And it says, this is the introduction, and there's a number of segments to it and examples. But I think we'll start with the introduction, since it's so relevant. It says, before we can understand the biblical concept of redemption as it applies to Jesus Christ, his work on the cross, we must understand the basic meaning that the word brought to the mind of most ancient people. Like a lot of words within today's church, redemption has come to us as a specifically religious term, but in ancient times it was primarily secular, a word that was in everyday usage, and then secondarily, it was used to describe God's dealing with mankind, whether we think of God as the person revealed to us in the Bible or of other belief systems. Although the use of the word has largely gone out of fashion in common everyday language, the concepts are still very much with us, but the word doesn't conjure up any complete understanding of the concepts behind the word. And redemption then has four basic characteristics. One, something or someone was in bondage. The freedom that was once available to them was non-existent or at least extremely restricted, so that a return to the original state of affairs was required for them to experience freedom, even though that free state may still have had limitations imposed that had previously existed before the bondage came about. That is to say, redemption does not win absolute freedom, but is specific in its work. There have been many religions through the ages who've seen their earthly circumstances as being restrictions upon freedom of expressing themselves, of demonstrating the real them. Some have even gone so far as to end this life, suddenly in order that they may have what they suppose to be a freer life elsewhere. But when you think about it, all men and women have some form of restriction placed upon them, whether self-made, which is a fidelity to marriage vow, or only having the time available to do one thing and not another, or obligatory. We can't live forever or fly to the moon. Death brings no real solution if when you enter it, you find yourself subjected to restrictions imposed upon you by the one who created all things. Far better that in this life we restrict ourselves to be pleasing to him and then find release and freedom for eternity when we die. In the secular usage of the term bondage, though we're primarily thinking about bondage that a restriction placed upon an individual's freedom in this life, usually by other men and women, which also contains the possibility that the bondage may be removed by a complete work of redemption, the Redeemer. One who would get involved in the liberation of what was in bondage. The Redeemer could even be the one that was in bondage, as we shall see, but usually it was another, independent person. Redeemer is, in more common terms, a buyer or a purchaser who must pay a price, a ransom, to secure the release of an object or a person. But he should think that, for instance, the purchasing of an item in a department store or corner shop is a demonstration of redemption, for there is no freedom that the item is being bought into that existed before it was offered for sale. Let me read that again. It's a little difficult to understand that. The purchasing of an item in a department store or corner shop is a demonstration of redemption, for there is no freedom that the item is being bought, or brought, rather, into that existed before it was offered for sale. Right? The price paid by the Redeemer secures a freedom that was in existence before the bondage was imposed upon it. And this can't be said of articles for sale. Ransom. A price paid by the Redeemer to cancel the bondage that existed. It was usually a monetary payment, but it could be material objects, or even a rare occasion, a person's life. In ancient times, human sacrifice played a major part of the religion of cultures who had a distorted concept of the character of God and who used to offer a sacrifice as the ultimate price to secure favors from their gods, more especially when the harvest of crops failed and when it was understood to be a sign that the gods were displeased with their worshippers. In that way, so it was thought, the blood sacrifice, or the ransom, bought for them a release from the anger of the gods and the freedom that had previously been experienced. Freedom. What had been a bondage was removed, and the individual person or object was restored into its original freedom, its primary state. It didn't bring a newness of situation, but a restoration. This is quite important. Though we may see many people throughout the world being brought into situations that are a better expression of freedom, redemption primarily concerned itself with the restoration of what was once available, not of bringing about a newness of experience in having previously been unknown. However, when we go on to look at the redemption that had been secured through Christ on the cross, the fullness of freedom available will be seen to be that which existed only for the first man and woman on earth, before the first sin was committed. But even so, aspects of that freedom will be restored that had been lost to individuals in their own lives. Summarizing, then, the action of the Redeemer by paying the ransom effected freedom from bondage, a release. Here we have the concept of redemption in one short sentence using the four keystones that are characteristic of it. These characteristics are evident in the following examples in section 2, taken from ancient times, which people understood as accomplishing redemption. Forms of redemption in ancient times. Manumission. We shall be returning to all these examples of manumission under Part D, which is coming up there. Hopefully show how the cross of Christ was paid, had paid the price, the ransom for each of them. For now, though, it's only necessary to show the differing forms that redemption took in the ancient world before we looked at how the Bible talks of the cross of Christ being a type of redemption. Let me stop there for a minute, because it's that concept of a Savior that was implanted in our consciousness. It's that fallacy. I can't say it's stronger than that. But that fallacy that was placed before us, and I say it was a false god, placed before us by the powers that be, who did not want us to... I mean, who says that we must be redeemed? Something in a pawn shop, you know? Our souls must be redeemed. To me, that's bullshit. Right? That is totally bull. Because I refuse to consider a pedophile priest to be worthy of my confession, you know? Or some pimp, pope-headed pompous ass, all right, sitting on some man-made throne, Rothschild-funded throne, all right, I do this or I'm damned if I do that. Fuck him. You know, fuck anybody like that. Who the hell are they? So, you know, my conviction, if you will, if you look at what God said by his Bible, all right, his first and most important commandment is, thou shalt have no other God before me. Hello. What does that mean? Well, it's pretty damn simple. I shall have no other God before me. So when we start throwing saints and sinners and, you know, wing nuts and wackos, okay, and evangelical preachers and every other god-awful thing, you know, that gets thrown at us, right? We are formulating just and but all of a sudden, there are these deities that people have put forward, like Lucifer and Christ, and you know, again, you have the two polarities. You know, you have the good and the evil. You have the you know, male and the female. You know, it's but why was man created like this? Why was humanity created this way? Why was the world created this way, with male and female, with you know, light and dark, with evil and good? And it's because that's what the way it is. You know, we have to pretty much accept that in ourselves. You know, that's part and parcel of our existence. All right, we can't get away from it. And what do we have to redeem, okay, in order to change that? Well, maybe if you look at it from strictly an exchange, which is what people seem to do, and what religions seem to do, is that in our financial exchange, if you will, then we are giving up our badness for goodness, right? Or we're giving up our goodness for badness. Where people go insane, where insanity rules, is when either or is possessed by either polarity, you know? In other words, if you're all wonderful and all good and all holy and all whatever, chances are you're crazier than a loon. Right? And you can't even walk on this earth. People will kill you. I can't get along with you. At the same time, if you're all bad, you're all psychopath, sociopath, same thing happens. You're crazy, you're insane, and people can't stand you. People just want to destroy you. Humanity and nature want to destroy you. So, what are you redeeming? If you're making a pact with God, your soul, for your heavenly soul. And don't get me wrong, your soul, I believe in an immortal soul. But I don't believe that we are confined to this world. You know? Nor do I believe that we are slaves to anyone. Unless we believe that we are made to believe that we are, and we're done, and that's done to us since childhood. You know, I mean, we're slaves to religion, or we're slaves to a financial industry, we're slaves to the government, we're slaves to whatever, but we're not. We're really not. Right? We're slaves to no one. Of course, we may be slaves to ourselves, in the sense that we develop many bad habits and become slavish to those. We become our character and our lives become chaotic because we don't understand the primary laws of nature or the primary laws of the cosmos. And those laws are simply polarities exist. There is good and there is bad. And better path. We'll receive karma. Good karma. Those who follow the bad path will receive bad karma. This is the law. This is the law of compensation. The law of nature. The law of the cosmos. And as above, so below. In other words, the way, the order of heaven is the same as the order here. All right. Karma is a universal cosmic law that just enforces everything. It enforces it. God created us and said, "This will balance existence." And if a civilization or a collectively a group of people are essentially evil, or essentially belligerent, and essentially horrible, it may take some time, but eventually the world will catch on. Eventually the powers of the universe will be engaged against these people or against these systems, right? And their power will be dissolved. Okay, and perhaps then there is a form of redemption, because what the redemption would be, they would redeem to us their power. and we would get freedom. But to minimize such a broad concept as the immortal soul into a word that has such paltry meaning, such a secular meaning, such as redemption, put on every 5-cent bottle in the universe, in the country, or to redeem, all right, redeem at your local redemption, and it's the same with redemption centers. Okay, I mean, I love it. You take something that's so such a highly sacred concept as redemption, that all the religions believe, and all of a sudden you throw it on a garbage dump, you know, redemption center. You know? I mean, it's like, I don't know. I mean, there's something wrong here. There's something desperately wrong with that concept. And to need a redeemer, I don't need a redeemer. I'm my own redeemer. You are your own redeemer. No? I have nothing to redeem. No? How am I going to redeem? Oh, God, forgive me for my sins. For I am so, 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 so. Well, that's not redemption. That's just asking for forgiveness. That's not redemption. No? Oh, yeah, well, you're getting a good feeling back from a bad feeling. Or, you know, raising your consciousness, but I have such difficulty with this. Here's another concept that is used by in redemption: prisoners of war. When war was ended, the victors would carry away captive prisoners of war and warriors and rulers of the opposing side captured in battle. Many of these POWs were put to forced labor, becoming slaves within the foreign nation. However, others, by their appearance, weren't suited to the menial drudgery of service, for they were the rulers and royalty, the leaders and older ruling men. To increase the spoils of war, the victors would make it known in the opposing camp that they had such and such a person, and were willing to release him for a certain sum. And this sum was known as the ransom. If team camp was able to raise this amount. It depended entirely on how well they thought that captive was thought of in their home territory as to how much they would ask. They swapped it for their comrade. He was redeemed out of the enemy's hands to be a free citizen in his own land. There's the ox owner. If an ox had been accustomed to gore in the past, but the owner hadn't taken any action to remove the possibility that it might take human life, then if it should kill, the owner of the ox was to be held accountable for the life of the one that the ox had killed. The punishment of death rested upon him. However, a ransom might be laid upon him, even though this was not obligatory. The first consideration was death, and it was to be paid. And though it doesn't say who exactly it was to be paid to, we imagine that it must have been some relative or other who was either directly related to the deceased person or who was the head of the family or tribal unit. In this way, the ox owner redeemed himself from the condemnation of death that rested upon him, and he was as free as he was before the incident took place. So in other words, money. Money solves everything. You know, money, here's the money. You know. Here, God, take all my wealth and put me in heaven. Thank you. Even though I've been a jackass and killed people and murdered people and did everything horrible in my life, here's all my money. You know, you can take it. I don't need it if I'm dead. Right? Sure. So, but that's going to be the deal with God? Yeah. It's the same with Christ. For one man to give up his life to save all men, right? Well, not only is that probably the most egotistical thing I've ever heard, but it's also crazy. So, I mean, for me to give up my life, right, for someone else, or for all of humanity, yeah, right, you know, God doesn't want that. God doesn't ask you to do that. You do it. You give your life to protect another life. You give your life out of love. That's another thing. You know, to defend somebody. To protect something. And I say not something, but someone. Then there's a special place for you. Heaven. The afterlife, I should say. But it was for doing that, it was a very noble deed. And one of the highest forms of human existence and consciousness, you know, to sacrifice your life for another. In a sense, to protect your, you know, nobody, well, I can't say that. Many people do that. You know, soldiers do it. Heroes do it. You know, they jump on landmines, you know, to protect their platoon, you know. Or hand grenades, or they run up and destroy, you know, a machine gun nest and save people. And it's bizarre what people will do, but God bless them, you know. And we hope there's a greater peace for them in the next life. But my focus is on this life. It's like your focus is, if you're listening to the show. We have to create a third dimensional existence. And if we do that, then we have to take into account the polarity concept of that we live in. Everybody. anybody that you know or know of struggles with this polarity. And hate and love, freedom and prison, sanity and insanity. There's always a polar aspect to every concept that we deal with. There's always an for every on, there's an in, you know. For every unlocked, there's a lock. So for every, there's an opposite for everything. And unless we accept that, we'll drive ourselves crazy. You know, we will go insane. So it's my message tonight is to try to make people understand that they are their own redeemers. And each step forward that you take in toward the path of Christhood, which is the path of human perfection, right, is one step closer to your own redemption. And again, you do not have to be pardoned, or you do not have to be anything, okay? You can do that yourself. You can forgive yourself. And once you forgive yourself, then you realize that, wow, you know, I don't have to have somebody else forgive me. Why should I put that other person in charge of my life, in charge of my happiness, in charge of my freedom, right? Up yours. Yeah, I don't need that. I mean, if you tell me you don't like me, I don't give a crap, okay? If I tell you I don't like you, you shouldn't give a crap either, right? You just move on. I mean, we have to like each other or love each other. That's a crock of shit, right? Because it doesn't happen. It can't happen. I can't love somebody who murdered somebody, okay? Murdered my friend. That's never going to happen. Right? I murdered my loved one. It's never going to happen. I'm never going to find love for that person. Right? And so I just accept that. So what do I forgive? I have to forgive myself. I have to forgive myself. I have to forgive the other person. Yeah, they don't care, right? It's you that cares. So you have to accept in yourself, you know, that they're wrong from the way that you think. They may be perfectly right from the way they think, but they did such a horrendous act, or, you know, why a soldier will murder a defenseless civilian, you know? You know, because they're so brainwashed and they're such psychopaths, they don't, it doesn't matter anymore. They're doing the right thing, you know? But, and they redeem themselves in each murder they do, you know, because they're saying it's for the country, you know, it's in self-defense, or it's in whatever. And they may be absolutely right, you know. I'm not ruling out their reasons for doing things. I'm just saying that it's not my reasoning. It's not the way I would think. So, again, it puts us in a dilemma whereby we're saying, what are we and who are we? decide. If we are the ones that decide on our fate, if you will, our destiny, we just get up every day, you know. And if we don't, well, hey, that's another question. Okay, maybe this is the very last day in your life. You don't know that. I don't know that. So why am I going to plague my limited existence on earth here, denying pleasure, denying a part of me that I was made up with? I mean, there are some people out there that say sex is wrong. Oh, you gotta have sex. Oh, that's terrible. Sex is the most wonderful thing you can have. You know? It's just wonderful. Right? Sex between two people is just the best. So it's like, you know, why is that wrong? Why is that shunned? You know, why is that, you know, considered, oh, that's a vice, that's bad, that's terrible. Maybe, but I can't, I never saw it that way. You know, I never saw that celebration of life and as anything to be ashamed of. So, I don't know, I mean, you don't want to be in public masturbating, you know, or banging somebody in public. You know, it's not cool. It's a private thing, but at the same time, there should be no shame placed upon that act. Hey, who says it's wrong? The government says it's wrong. The government suddenly is, you know, your jailer. Okay? The government is also your redeemer because they can decide to let you go. Right? So, the government acts as God. I don't think that's right. I don't think they have the right to do that. And they don't. They can play, play a good guy, bad guy, cops all day long. But it's up to you, individual, to decide if you're going to play with them. Right? And when it's like kid who insists on playing with you, right? Playing this game, and you say, look, I can't take this suit anymore. I'm sorry. Stop. You know, I don't like the game. I don't want to play the game, and I, you know, get away from me. Right? All of a sudden, the kid goes away, you know? Or it's like a dog, you know, who keeps coming at you with his chew toy, and, you know, you finally get sick of it and say, no, go away, you know? Well, that's the same way you say with a police state. It's the same thing you say with your government. Same thing you say in a horrid marriage or relationship. You know, you say, I'm yours. I'm not part of this. You're your own redeemer. You're your own redeemer. You are your own Christ. There's nobody ahead of you. There's nobody to pray to. You have to sit back and look at your circumstances and say, but you can say, God, give me the strength to get through this. I have said that more than once, I can tell you that. But I didn't say, Christ, get me through this, or Pope John, get me through this, or, you know, what? He always listened. He always got me through it, whatever it was, however hard it was. That's why I'm sitting here today, you know. As living testimony to the fact that there is no mediator. God, he doesn't want a mediator. He doesn't ever put a mediator there. You know, he always had you. He's always in our hearts. He's always in our minds. And all he wanted is for us to recognize that. When we recognize that, we have the power to transcend our existence and ascend to a higher level, and we find our dreams and our ambitions, if you will, our desires become fulfilled when we have faith in that all of our desires are put to God, not to some mediocre medium, right? Not to some psychic or some, you know, foreign element, but directly to God. When we do that, he speaks directly to us. And that is his aim. That is his name. That is his ourselves the pleasure. Give ourselves the pain of guilt, the pain of shame, the pain of pain, you know. We put it on ourselves. And no one else does. We put ourselves in situations that will lead us to harm. And for those who were put in bad positions or are put in bad positions in their lives in slavery, in human slavery, they have to align themselves again with God, with themselves, and make them understand, make them each, you know, they have to understand their own power and the power that they have over those who want to enslave them. Right? The power of resistance, the power of self-defense, the power of anger and hatred and all of these things. You know, the power to do violence, right? Or the power to do nonviolence, but whatever it is that you decide to do, you are the person to decide. Not some president or congressman or general or captain. You, okay? You decide. You're the redeemer. Yeah. And for that, I'm going to leave you tonight. And I wanted to, I think I'll play that song again because it's a wonderful song. And I hope you'll go to the to the website here that I just or to the definition site, if you will, and go into that, because I don't agree with redemption. In the last few words here, it says, having seen how the ancients understood the concept of redemption, we now look at the Bible talks of as redemption we have in Christ before returning to the last section to see how Christ was paid the price of each situation previously described, which is sin and all that stuff. All right? Well, I personally don't believe in Christ, right? He may have been alive at the time, and he may have been a wise guy, but, you know, he wasn't God any more than I'm God or you're God. And he was the Son of God in the same sense that you were the sons or daughters of God. With that, you know, that's all we can figure. That's all I can say. You are your own Redeemer. Don't believe that you aren't. I'll leave you with that tonight, and then I'll play us out with a great song, the Redemption Song, Bob Marley.
Song of freedom, it's all